Hello, friends. Now we move on. We're on Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 145A. Today is the 1st of August 2013. And we have been discussing the idea of when it is possible to feel the will. It emerges in human consciousness after the third initiation, the point at which personality or form life is transcended, and the monad becomes the object of desired attainment. Maybe it is for some even before that point, but let's say that it comes somewhat into view between the second and third initiation, I would say. Its spiritual pressure is then increasingly felt. How well is it known? That's another matter. It's known increasingly up to the sixth initiation and beyond. But let's just say the monad is initially felt and somewhat known. At the third degree. And even leading up to the third degree. It is therefore only possible to point to distant goals. We can, however, gain some dim human interpretations of divine goals by relating these rays and their transmitting constellations to our earth. And that's what we seek to do, gain some dim interpretation of divine goals. And divine goals are not so much determined by the plan as by the purpose. So, determined by purpose. Individual apprehension will be dependent upon the point of development, and only the higher initiates will understand the real implications of my remarks, and presumably then this book will be read by higher initiates as well. I'm sure that Master DK has written on multiple levels and put into this book that which the higher initiates can appreciate and which will probably give to them hints that they may need. It is that way with the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. We know the third and fourth book are read by the masters, we're told. And yet they still have something of value for us as well. All right. So that's that little bit of a review, let us say. You have to remember, he says, therefore, as you study these most deeply esoteric relations, that we approach them from two angles, the only angles which are as yet possible for the finite mind of man. You kind of wonder whether any mind can be infinite, whether any specific quantity or specific object or faculty can be considered infinite. But really, to call the mind of man finite is correct. It's very finite. It's very limited by its conceptions. And I think only later will we realize how very limited it has been. So the relation of the three constellations to the rays, which are each expressing the quality of life of an informing entity, the being who is expressing identity, that's okay, that's, watch that, the being who is expressing identity through one or other of the seven stars of the Great Bear Ursa Major, as we probably ought to call this constellation, the Latin name, Ursa Major. So the relation of the three constellations to the rays, which are expressing the quality of the life of an informing entity. These are capitalized terms, and obviously it's a great, very great being. But, of course, let's say, very great being, but a being of lesser stature than the Lord of Ursa Major, of Ursa Major. Yes, I see how that works. The being who is expressing identity through one or other of the seven stars of the Great Bear. And it's one being. So, you know, in this wording, he may be hinting. In this wording, he may be hinting at the fact that the Lord of Ursa Major is the being in question. So what I've been trying to do is to look at the difference in the status between the Lord of a star within Ursa Major and the Lord of the entirety of Ursa Major itself, probably a very great distinction. Probably the kind of distinction analogous to the distinction between a solar logos and a planetary logos on a much lower level. So we're going to look at this from two angles, he tells us. So we look at the relation of the constellation and the rays, and then the three aspects of the will which the three constellations are expressing, and to which human beings will consciously respond after the third initiation. And these three aspects are, so we've been dealing with these three all the time. These three aspects are only consciously apprehended after the third degree. The will which conditions and initiates, and it said the will which conditions life, but now we're given a new function for this. This was the will which conditions life, and not so much was spoken of the will to initiate. But since it will be correlated with Aries, I think we can see this. The will which brings fulfillment, a brief epitome of this, and the will which conquers death. The variability is shown in relation to this first title. Because I think, let's see, what page are we on here? Page 968. Let's go into this, and we'll look back for the will which conditions life. Will conditions life, and we will look later in the book, in the 500s. Right. The will which conditions the life aspect, there it is. The will which brings fulfillment of right human relations, and the will which conquers death. So these are ways that we have listed this type of will before. And let's do that here from page 580, I believe. Let's see if there are other ways in which this is listed. I think in terms of the view, hidden, it's okay, page 582. All right, EA 582, and we will reduce it in size. I think, and now we'll look for one more reference for similar names. Okay, 592, the will as the conditioner of the life aspect, and this is the will which brings fulfillment. It's spoken of here. I think we've reached almost the end. And now we're going to go ahead and talk about it further. Okay. And I know there is one more way that this is put, but I think it's sufficient here. The will which conditions the life aspect, and then it's added, the idea of initiation is added to this, the will which initiates. The first aspect is called the will which initiates, and we have just discussed that. We'll go back here and look a little bit. Ah, here it is. The will to initiate, the will to unify, back on page 605. And let's see if there's anything else. I think there is something in the very beginning of it. Will which conquers death. The conditioning will is the synthesis of the life. It's the conditioning will. Okay. The will which conquers death is an outpouring from the cosmic mental plane. Okay, I think we should include that as well here. We will. We'll do it this way. Outpouring. Outpouring. From the cosmic outpouring from the cosmic mental plane. All right, here it is. And we'll bring these three together also, page 594 and 595. And we'll go back to where we were. Okay. It's a little bit slowed down, I'm sorry. I want to get these things together. All right, right there. And this is EA, page 594 and 595. So we're gathering together the other ways that he has spoken about these three aspects of the will. What is important for us to see is that only after the third initiation is it possible to respond to the will which the three constellations are expressing. The will which conditions and initiates. It's also called the will which conditions the life aspect, and the conditioning will is the synthesis of the life of the cosmic physical plane, of which our seven planes are the seven subplanes. Until, therefore, the human consciousness is far more expanded, it is not possible for man to understand this synthetic relation. So, these are the two factors, the two angles that we can approach from. The relation of the three constellations to the rays, which are expressing the life of an informing entity. And that entity has been considered to be one of the stars of the Great Bear. And the three aspects of will be responded to after the third degree. So we'll call this two angles of understanding. Right. Okay. Before entering into a closer analysis of our subject, I would remind you that we are in reality dealing with universals, symbolized for us in the huge aggregate of constellations of which our theme, with which our theme is concerned. Universality has to do, I suppose, with the entire universe, but on our own small scale, what hints at that entirety is the large aggregations, which seem, in a sense, universal when compared with that part of the cosmos with which we are dealing. All right, so the seven stars of the Great Bear, or Ursa Major, are involved in an intricate relation with Ursa Minor and the Pleiades. And this is a very important hint, because the seven stars of Ursa Minor are to be related, I think, to the seven solar systems, to the stars of the, no, I want to say major stars of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. I think that Sirius, in a way, stands by itself with its Sirius B, but in another way, it is within the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Certainly, it is so close to our sun, the second closest star, that in terms of how normal astronomy is understood, it would be very difficult to consider that these two stars are not related. And we have already quite a discussion and description of the various ways in which they are related, with Sirius as the initiator of our solar logos. So there's seven major stars in Ursa Major, seven major stars in Ursa Minor, related to seven major stars in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And then we have the seven major stars of the Pleiades, or even nine stars if the so-called parents of the Pleiades, Atlas and Pleione, are considered. Well, this is the intricate relationship, and to me, it suggests a 21. A 21 is suggested. Now, when you think of Sirius, you think only, thinking of Sirius, one thinks only of two or three. Sirius A, Sirius B, and there is a hidden star. It may be a burnt-out star, sometimes called Sirius C. But in mythology, what I understand from my wife, Tuya, who studies the Egyptian mythology quite closely, is that both Sirius A and Sirius B are involved in the Egyptian system of initiation, with Sirius B involved in a symbol, through the symbol of an eye, which beholds the initiate at the fourth initiation, and Sirius A representing a throne, frequently seen on the top of the head, which means mastership. That they may also be involved with some sort of Agnus center function, I don't doubt. To me, there's a very close relation between Sirius, the Sirian grouping of two or three, and what we might call our Sirian cosmic logos, which involves also, this struck me, also our local stars. One wonders whether Sirius A and B could be involved in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, in the same way as Alpha Centauri A and B. Groupings of stars, I suppose. If the centaurs, Alpha Centauri, were supposed to represent the sexual organs, or the two ovaries, or the two testicles, there would be an A and a B part. There would be a tunis to it. The same with the Agnus center. So that is it is possible then to include Sirius B in the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. In any case, sometimes they seem to stand by themselves, or Sirius by itself. Sometimes, in theory, they seem to be related to six other solar systems, our sun to six other solar systems, or Sirius A and B to Sirius A, let us say, to six other solar systems, including our sun. And in that case, there is a sevenness, which can correspond to the sevenness of Ursa Minor. We can assume, when we look at the configuration of Ursa Minor, that there can be considered to be seven major stars in Ursa Minor. Polaris seems to be the foremost star. So that relationship between... See, it's along the second aspect line that it has to be sorted out. There's no question that Ursa Minor is the sun aspect, the Christ aspect, but so is Sirius. And I think Sirius is that on a lower turn of the spiral. And we would also have to examine the relationship between the Ajna Center and the solar plexus center. There is kind of a relation here. If we examine the Ajna Center and the solar plexus center, we find, again, two-ness. The higher and lower point of the solar plexus center and the two leaves of the Ajna Center. So there may be a closer relation than we think, and Sirius A and B both may be included in this system of seven major stars. The question is, are doubles supposed to be considered as one star? We have Alpha and Beta Centauri. Are they as one star, or are they to be considered two? I think they would both be related to the same chakra, and there would have to be duality in that chakra. Anyway, Ursa Minor is not mentioned very much, but it does have a highly occult place to play. And I think, yeah, I think the fact that the solar plexus center is dual in the human being is going to tell us something about the duality of the stellar representatives. Now the question is about Alpha and Beta Centauri. Are they, I think the two of them together may be related, however, to the sacral center, and there is a duality there. There's a duality in the sacral center, a duality in the solar plexus center, and a duality in the Ajna center. What will be the star that truly represents the solar plexus center in these seven solar systems, of which ours is one? This has yet to be completely clarified. So we're dealing on two different levels here. We're dealing with this constellation called the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, which channels its energy through Taurus, Scorpio, and Mars, and can be considered to be related to cosmic desire. And we are looking within that grouping of seven solar systems, of which ours is one, and we're looking at what stars or dual stars represent the different chakras in that being. We have the notion that the sun, our sun, represents a heart center within that cosmic logos, and what we have discovered is that the luminosity of our sun appears to be the lowest of all the stars which are hypothesized to be gathered into the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. In one way, when you look at Sirius A and B, it could be considered a solar system and not a constellation. In order to constellate things, I think you need more than two. I think the triangle should be the beginning of that. And there are a number of dual systems, two-star systems, more, in fact, than single-star systems. And I think they should be called systems. But, you know, it's this number two is ambiguous. Is it a constellation or is it a system? Is it more related to the number one or more related to the many? Two in Pythagorean mathematics does lead to the many, and therefore is considered a number which is not held in favor. It leads to the infinite, ultimately. I think the Pythagoreans did not deal so much with the infinite. They rather rejected it. They considered it to be beyond bounds and inimical to the idea of a coherent and beautiful cosmos. So So anyway, there is this intricate relation with Ursa Minor and the Pleiades, and with this we shall not deal, he says. This major triplicity of constellations has a peculiar relation to that great being, well, yeah, it does, referred to as the one about whom naught may be said. Oh, this is so important. What is that peculiar relation? You know, to me, this relation is about, there's different ways to look at it. You can look at this in terms of the head structure, in which case you will have, with Ursa Major, the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. And with Ursa Minor, you will have the Agnes series, I wonder. Well, there are either seven head centers in the region of the head or 14. Seven may be within the head and seven above the head, as I've said before in this Tibetan headdress, which is goes over the head in this manner. And probably along that line are found various head centers. This is sometimes called the Ajna series. I'll show you what I mean here. It's coming from a book on Laya Yoga, and maybe we can find it here. Be nice to, that's it. This is the Ajna series, the Ajna system, and although these different chakras seem to be rising straight up, they are really, as it were, curving over the head. And so the chakras, I suppose, representing the spiritual triad are particularly there, and finally we're reaching the Sarasrara chakra. We're reaching the thousand-petaled lotus. But it all begins with the Ajna center, which is twofold in a way. So there's a very intricate system of Laya Yoga which could be investigated here and which would tell us more about the chakras, I think, than have been told up till now in many of the books we're reading. Well, the Tibetan told Roberto Saggioli that the head center was mysterious and occult and more was not to be given out about it, but you can begin to connect together various pieces of information and something will be shown. One can count the different number of petals that are involved in these chakras. The Manas chakra, it's in the region of the head. It has six petals surrounding a central circle, and of course the moon is there, interestingly enough, connecting to the third ray, which the moon does in a symbolic sense, even though it transmits the fourth ray, which it doesn't really. There are probably some hidden planet that it veils transmit that. We can't get much of a sense from the Mahadana chakra, from the Indu chakra. A Buddhi, we can maybe say there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. And this is the seat of Buddhi, and there are 16 petals. This will connect it with the throat center in some way. And it's a 4 squared. It's almost like a higher octave of the Buddhi. The Buddhi is the 4, and we're squaring it. Then we have this Nirvana chakra, which I suppose is associated with the atmic plane. And I'm not going to go through the effort here of counting these petals, but it would be interesting to do. I might get lost along the way. There are so many of them. Just because I said I wouldn't, let's do it. One, I'll take my glasses off to see better. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, six. As I figured, I would be lost along the way. One, two, three. No, I'm not going to do it this way. This will take too much time. But if they have been faithful in representing the number of petals in the Hindu system associated with this, then we're going to learn something about Atma, which is really nirvana. I don't think it's related to the monad. Here, this is related to the monad. The guru chakra we can count. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12 petals. And that seems, the buddhi chakra had 16, and the guru chakra, which is, seems closely related to the monad, and which is apparently an occult chakra, because it's not mentioned in the standard approaches, must be close to the monad, because the monad has, we understand, a 12-foldness connected with it. It's called the greater 12, I believe, in the second rule, the second formula for healing from the old commentary in esoteric healing. Well, there's a lot to study here, and we have to bring ourselves into the position when understanding these types of intricate numbers and their relations will be of some practical value. Maybe later, when I have some time and I'm not worried about mistakes, I can count the guru chakra. Nirvana chakra. I really want to do it. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Oh, no. It's too easy to get lost. One. Too easy to get lost. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. Is it possible 48? If, for instance, I counted one quarter and given a complete symmetry, we would have 64 altogether. 3 times 16, 48, 4 times 16, 64. This would be interesting in terms of the relationship of the number 64 to the ashram. Once we reach the 64th number, once we reach 64, we have to begin again in constituting the members of the ashram. These are cosmic and systemic laws which may not be violated. So, yes, these are numbers. The Nirvana chakra, interestingly, has, if the way it looks is correct, 4 times more petals than the Buddhi chakra, and 6 times more petals than the Guru chakra. We know so little about Nirvana and the Atmic plane. But as I say, this is a chakric system. Now, I just have this impression that the number 14 is related to the head, and that the Great Bear and the Little Bear are involved in this. Now, I have been assuming that the Great Bear is related to centers within the head. It could be that the Great Bear is related to the centers above the head, and the Little Bear related to centers within the head. Obviously, nothing is given out about this, but the fact that there is a number 14, DK refers to it, and he talks about the sum of the Great Bear and the Little Bear as the 14 stars, and we have references to centers in the head, and these Hindu references to centers above the head, they seem to correlate with the Great Bear and the Little Bear. Of course, there's also the possibility, we have to remember the solar nature of Vulcan. since the sun often veils it, and the fact that we have a heart center within the head, which has 12 petals, at least in man, and with which Vulcan is associated, because this head center is related to the heart of the sun. Well, you know, the plot thickens. We have an amazing head center here, and working out the intricacies would be a speculative task. They might seem to gel under the law of correspondences, but I think we would need the confirmation of a knowing teacher in order to be able to confirm that we had understood this system of interrelations correctly. So this major triplicity of constellations has a peculiar relation to that great being who I have called at times, referred to as the one about whom naught may be said. Well, we know for sure that the Great Bear has a definite relation, and we've been told what it is. The Great Bear and the head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. So let's see if we can find that. And bear head centers. Centers. Maybe great. Put that there. And now we have five references. Let's see what we have. We have here, it should be remembered also that all these centers have their correspondences in etheric matter found in the region of the head, and that it is when these seven head centers are awakened that their counterparts are also safely awakened. These seven head centers correspond in the microcosm to the seven rishis of the Great Bear, the prototypes of the seven heavenly men. So this is found in The Light of the Soul. Is it written by Alice Bailey? Is it suggested by the Tibetan? We don't know, but let's just take a little, what we'll do here is give us a little space, and we'll put down that reference. So this is LOS, Light of the Soul, Light of the Soul, and that's on page 82. Then we'll look for another reference here, the next one. Here it is. Our solar system with the Pleiades and one of the stars of the Great Bear form a cosmic triangle. And is there more than one of the stars in the Pleiades, or the entire Pleiades? Or an aggregation of three centers in the body of him of whom naught may be said? The seven stars in the constellation of the Great Bear are the correspondences to the seven head centers in the body of that being greater than our Logos. Again, two other systems, when allied with the solar system and the Pleiades, make the lower quaternary, which are eventually synthesized into the seven head centers in much the same way as the human being, as in the human being after the fourth initiation. So there, and here we have here the base of the spine, solar plexus, heart, and throat. That will require much pondering. I think I pondered it earlier, and I've forgotten my pondering, but I'm going to put this down here as yet another Treatise on Cosmic Fire, 182, was it? Yes, it was. So the seven stars in the constellation of the Great Bear are the correspondences to the seven head centers. These seven head centers in the region of the head, either within the head or above the head or both. This is what we have to determine at some point. They are to him what the heart, head, and throat centers are to the developing. Here's the logos of a solar system. It's esoterically called the sacred triangle of all-inclusive force, because this great being includes in his focused awareness the fields of expression of the Great Bear, the Pleiades, and Sirius. They are to him what the heart, head, and throat centers are to the developing initiate on this planet. Well, Great Bear again is here associated with the head. So we've seen that. And again, we keep on repeating the same references. So these are the two important references here. And I'm going to simply bring them into a smaller state so we know they are quotations from another source. And we will make them small. In any case, I know it's a bit of a digression, but it seems to me that both the Great Bear and the Little Bear are associated with the head, that part of the great being, the one about whom naught may be said, which corresponds to the head. And what I'm going to do is put down even more that's connected with the head of this great being. We're going to say that the Ursa Minor, Ursa Major, and the Zodiac are all connected with the head energies of the one about whom naught may be said. Because the Zodiac, we know, is the heart in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. And it would be worth finding that and quoting it. Constellations, heart, head. Whoa. That's going to be in the Rays and Initiations. Heart, head, center, one about whom, and maybe we'll be able to find it here. Okay, this is Initiation Human and Solar, and it's probably two. All that can be said in regard to their effort is the statement that the path carries them through the medium of the logoic head center into the heart of the one about whom naught may be said. And this center is, of course, one of the seven constellations. Yes, this is the area that I intend to deal with, but I think the way to do this, that in fact the way to do this is to look at this reference, and I have found it. It took a couple of minutes, so I turned this off. The zodiacal wheel is itself essentially a cosmic center. It is a 12-petal lotus, but it is a 12-petal lotus within the 1,000-petal lotus of an unknown cosmic entity, the one referred to in my earlier books as the one about whom naught may be said. So there we have it. We have three major factors which are connected with the head structure of the one about whom naught may be said. And maybe there are others as well. The correspondences have to be worked out, and in the new schools they will be. It will take time, it will take patience to do that. And right now I'm simply trying to go through this book in a manner which is suggestive of further and deeper thought. So there is a peculiar relation. What if we're dealing here with an Ajna system an Ajna system of stars, an internal system internal to the head of that great being of stars, and I suppose involved in the brain of that great being, and then the major heart in the head center. And I would like to add something to that, a speculation, puts the hundreds of Pleiades, and I think what I have to do here is make sure that we're in the right set as default. Yes, okay. And the hope is the hundreds of Pleiades will represent the smaller petals in the head center of the one about whom. So those four groupings, to my way of thinking, represent the gathering in the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. And we know that there are going to be centers above. For instance, there's going to be a heart center in the head. That's one of the seven. I'm not talking about the major heart center. I'm just talking about one of the seven. Maybe there are seven above the head. There are a number of higher prototypes which can be correlated with the lesser heart center that's found between the shoulder blades of the human being, and which is found also as one of the constellations of the one about whom naught may be said. Well, all right, occasionally as we get into this latter part of the book, there will be digressions which relate more to cosmology. One should almost connect this with the last part of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. It might be something really worth doing. It certainly will expand the sense of the correspondences to which we can refer. All that can be hinted at is that these three galaxies of stars, now why does he use the term galaxy? It is a kind of, do they turn? Let's ask this. Why use the term galaxies? They are very different from the galaxies as we now conceive, but perhaps they turn. The Great Bear, the Little Bear, and the zodiac itself, but we're talking actually about the Pleiades here, and the Pleiades are a great aggregation of stars, that these three are the three aspects of that indescribable absolute monad, the ineffable cause of the seven solar systems of which ours is one. I believe there is a blind here, and I've been hinting at this, that there are two ways of describing the seven solar systems. One as a constellation of seven stars, of seven major stars, maybe it's bigger than that, major stars, and the other as a grouping of seven constellations, which, after all, are systems of stars, and hence they are ostensibly they are within reason, solar systems understood in a different way. In other words, constellations as systems of stars can be considered to be solar systems. I think there are two ways of looking at this. And I think I have sometimes argued with my peers and associates in esoteric astrology, arguing for the idea that the seven solar systems of which ours is one is comprised only of solar logoi, and it means our local solar logoi. But there's another way to look at it, that these constellations themselves are solar systems, and our solar system, in other words, our constellation, our local constellation, of which our sun is a part, should be considered as, in this way of thinking, as our solar system. In other words, we have a local constellation. It's got seven major stars. Our stars is one of them. And it's also a solar system. So there are seven of these constellations, and our sevenfold solar system of stars is one of these solar systems. So I've argued both ways for it, and the key is to determine when he's talking about our local system of seven stars and when he is talking about seven constellations which are solar systems, and the constellation in which our sun plays a part is also a solar system, and in fact it's our solar system. So when we use the term our solar system, we can mean two things. One, our local constellation, of which our sun represents a heart center and is one of the major stars. So that's one. Two, our that is the larger thing, our single starred star system, which has well, let's say 115 plus planets. In other words, it's a one-star system, a one-star solar system, and it is ours. All right, it can mean those two things. So in some sense, the higher meaning here, is this, that our solar system is the same as our constellation. Well, it is a workout to try to find the right connections between these great galaxies of stars, as the Tibetan calls them. He has another place where he refers to galaxies of stars, constellations as galaxies of stars, and signs as concentrated influences. In this way of thinking, galaxies are constellations of galaxies of stars are constellations. And he's not referring necessarily to the technical structure of a spiral, a circular, a galaxy in all these various shapes. We see them comprised of billions of stars. He's not using the word galaxies in that way. Well, okay. I put so many notes here that I don't know where we started. Anyway, before entering into a closer analysis of our subject, I would remind you that we are dealing with universals symbolized for us in the huge aggregate of constellations, you know, our zodiacal constellations and others with which our theme is concerned. So there's an intricate relation here. It's involved in the one about whom not may be said. It involves, I think, the head center, and, you know, is Sirius per se, the star Sirius A and then Sirius B, to be involved in the head center of that great being? The correspondence is very nice. It Sirius A, Sirius B, a two-petaled Ajna center. But in the same way, you know, there's an analogy here. What about Sirius? I'm going to say this. What about Sirius A and B? Should it be the Ajna center in the one about whom? Well, should Venus be the Ajna center in our solar logos? I think here's what I'm going to say, that just as Venus is closely related through its sixth ray monad to the solar plexus of the solar logos, so is Sirius A and B as two points related to the solar plexus center of the one about whom naught may be said. That particular system. So every planetary logos rises in his functions. We could see a rising, you know, it's like moving up through the ranks. Now you fulfill one function, now a higher function, now yet a higher function. We can see Venus is related to a solar plexus, later to a heart, and later to a 96 or 98 petaled Agna center. Presumably the higher the center in the vehicle, the more powers that it has. We usually think of the throat center as lower than the heart center. It certainly is lower than the heart and the head center, but in some ways it may be higher than the human heart center. So just as Venus can rise through our solar system and perhaps play different functions at different times in the development of our solar system, our solar logos, in different incarnations, who knows, maybe some planets move onto the path of solar logoi and are no longer being represented as planets, and perhaps the three synthesizing planets in the next solar system will not be Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn. Perhaps they will be replaced by those other planets coming up through the ranks. So Venus could be connected with the solar plexus, heart, and maybe even Agna center of our one about whom of our solar logos, and maybe Sirius can be connected at first with the solar plexus and later with the heart, and later even with the Agna center of the one about whom naught may be said. We don't know how many incarnations there are for the one about whom naught may be said. We're not sure of that. And we know that this is the fifth incarnation of our solar logos and the second major, but we must presume that that in which it lives and moves and has its being also has incarnations. And what would they be? Into which incarnation are we? I know this sounds far-fetched, but are we living in a sacred one about whom naught may be said, or in a one about whom naught may be said who has not yet achieved its correspondence to the fifth initiation? Obviously, the analogy has to continue. Right. Well, I know these may seem to be wild speculations and may have more to do with a treatise on cosmic fire than with esoteric astrology, but one can't help but see the overlap between them as we get into the last part of the astrology book. And as I say, I'm trying to offer seed thoughts here. Some of them may be good seeds and will really germinate something which will square with intuitive confirmation, and others may be fruitless, but still I offer them. All that can be hinted at is that these galaxies of stars, these three constellations, the Great Bear, the Little Bear, Ursa Minor, and also the Pleiades, are the three aspects of that indescribable absolute monad, the ineffable cause of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. It's a beautiful blind. It's like the seven solar systems, the seven constellations, of which our constellation is one, because a constellation is a solar system. That is what has to be understood. A constellation, probably said it so many times trying to prove it to myself, is a solar system in the larger sense. So let's make that really big here, if possible. Yes, here we are. There we go. I think if we get that in mind, that a solar system is a solar system, a one-starred or two-starred solar system is a normal solar system, and a constellation is a solar system also. The art of blinding is offered in many ways, but one of the ways is to use the same term for two different things, and conversely, different terms for the same thing. Why is occult blinding necessary? So that you can speak to different levels of students at the same time without leading the lower levels of students into too much knowledge and therefore too much danger, as knowledge is power and knowledge is responsibility. So we could go on stacking up knowledge, you know, and then be responsible for what we had done or for what we had accumulated, especially if we didn't do anything with it. Well, all right. The 12 constellations of the zodiac, each with its own interrelations, peculiar to its own integral life, form, each of them, part of a triangle of energies. Well, this has been our theme. Each with its own interrelations. In other words, the stars within a constellation are interrelated, probably in the form of triangles, and there are probably interrelations between the stars within a constellation and the stars within another constellation. To give you an idea that that does work, we have within the Great Bear, we have stars which are related, the Great Bear is a constellation. There are stars which are related to corresponding stars within the Pleiades, and I suppose, I think, within the Little Bear as well. And this would be true of constellations in the zodiac as well. I mean, we might, you know, there are royal stars. They're called four royal stars. There is Aldebaran in Taurus, Regulus in Leo, Antares in Scorpius, and Fomalhaut in the Pisces area, and maybe somewhat near the Aquarius area. There's an overlap there. I'd have to study that more specifically. But those four royal stars have a relation, and yet they are in four different zodiacal constellations. Well, right. Let's say that this, at the moment, is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 145A, and we are on page 608. That's where we are. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 145, page 145B, page 608. Okay.